Hi, I'm Dwayne Sola.
And I'm Joyce.
And you're listening to The Confidant,
a podcast where we discuss the news you need to know at the intersection of business, tech, and culture.
This episode, we have so many interesting topics we're going to discuss, from Youthphoria's blackface foundation scandal to how stores are cracking down on their return policies. There's this new concept floating around, chocolate-free chocolate. And then finally, we're going to talk about how the food and dining industry is looking to lure people back into their restaurants.
So let's get into it. Youthphoria's newest foundation for dark skin is so controversial, it's being compared to blackface. So for those who do not know, Youthphoria is a clean beauty makeup brand marketed as sustainable and good for your skin. And they're best known for appearing on Shark Tank and getting a $400,000 investment from billionaire Mark Cuban. The brand released its Date Night Skin Tint Serum Foundation line back in September of 2023. And out of 15 shades, only had 5 that were suitable for dark skin. The founder, Fiona Chan, said that the first launch was proof of concept. So in March of 2024, they released 7 more shades from medium deep to deep skin tones. And the shade that is causing up a stir is the darkest, 600 deep.
What is so controversial about 600 deep?
For one, we can look at content creator Gloria. She is a very popular dark skin beauty influencer, and she was one of the first of many to call out Youthphoria for this shade that is so dark, it doesn't necessarily have any dimension, and it almost comes out like black paint. She did a swatch on her skin and just expressed how she was not happy with the shade. It came out way too dark. And in the comment section, you would see people saying, well, there are people who are this dark. Gloria has a very deep and rich complexion. And she would fall under the category of what some may consider the target audience for this shade. But when more influencers and more creators started coming out from Senegal, Sudan, Kenya, making videos swatching the foundation and saying, this is not for us, we don't look like this, the conversation started to grow. And then there was even a cosmetic chemist, Javon Ford, who usually makes TikToks talking about beauty products and their ingredients. He made a video comparing the ingredients in 600 Deep to the ingredients of Youthphoria's lighter shades and noted that the lighter shades had 3 color pigments, while 600 Deep only had a pigment called black iron oxide, which is pure black.
You know, I can't quite wrap my head around the fact that essentially black face paint would be put into a bottle and marketed to people with deeper complexions. I think there's a misconception that people with darker complexions don't have undertones. And it doesn't matter how deep someone is, where they're from, they have different undertones. They could have red, they could have blue, they could have olive, it could be neutral. Just because you're a darker complexion doesn't mean that you're like flat. You know, we also have to talk about the fact that the CEO and founder initially could not find a model that matched this color. So they almost went on a global search to prove that someone could use this foundation. For me, once you realize you couldn't find a model to match it, I think that was the first sign we probably shouldn't release this.
She had a TikTok series, multiple videos talking about how she did casting calls with modeling agencies and could not find a match. So she went to the other side of the world, not specifying where exactly, standing in a shopping mall, turning her head left and right, like, okay, who can I see? And ended up pulling 2 men who I'm sure were not the target audience for this specific launch, given that every other model in the swatch list that they actually have on the site is a woman.
The average consumer just wants to feel like they're being taken seriously when they make requests. And this bottle of makeup feels like the opposite of that. So I'm curious how this is going to impact their business and if they're going to be able to overcome this, especially after facing backlash with their limited range just last year.
I'm noticing more non-Black people are stepping up to the plate to call out the brand on social media, especially experts from varying aspects of the beauty industry, people who work in chemistry like Javon or working in marketing, communications. They understand that this may have been a miscalculated move from Youthphoria. We'll never get to the root of whether it was intentionally malicious, but I know what people are feeling in the moment. And so Youthphoria has a big decision to make.
So Joyce, a few weeks ago, I was in Sephora. After ringing up all of my items and I paid, I noticed that they didn't give me a receipt. And I was like, can I have a receipt, please? And they go, we'll email it to you. You should receive it in about an hour or like under an hour. I'm like, okay, la 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 la, I leave. And I noticed that I didn't receive the receipt. So I go back and they go, it'll show up under your Sephora's member account. So don't worry about it. And I was like, okay, but if I wanted to make an exchange or return, what happens? And they're like, it'll be on your account. We have proof of the purchase. It's totally fine. So me being me, I start looking this up, like, are they trying to save on paper? Like, what's going on? This led me down a wormhole to start reading about the return policy at Sephora. And some customers that were discussing on Reddit basically said that Sephora has an internal system that tracks how many items you're returning. So some people try to bring back some items to be returned and they were denied, while others were flagged. That had me thinking, was Sephora facing a return problem or people using items and bringing them back or trying to find a way to cheat the system? Well, taking a step back, it turns out that retailers have been focused on efforts to mitigate returns as total returns for the industry amounted to $743 billion in merchandise in 2023. This is according to the National Retail Federation.
I actually saw a CNBC report that says 81% of retailers put in place pay-to-return policies in 2023. I've noticed this because a lot of places are now asking you to pay for shipping up front so you can get the label and then take it to UPS or any other shipment stations so you can get your stuff out back into their hands. Notably, it's Amazon, Macy's, TJ Maxx, Walmart, who are generally considered places you can get items on a budget. They're rolling out the changes to make sure that they're not bleeding out money on those returns because they are very costly to the companies. So in practice, you may now notice shrinking return windows or simply being told to keep the item. I saw another report from the Wall Street Journal saying that a lot of retailers in the U.S. are using third-party loss prevention services. And one of the most popular is a software provider called the Retail Equation. They essentially track your data, your consumer behavior, and they assign a return score to you based on what they get from the retailer. And a lot of times you don't even know because you opt into this software when you sign up online and create an account and click I agree on the terms and conditions, or just by being a shopper in the store, it's kind of a package deal. If you're shopping here, then you're going to get tracked, but it's not always explicit. So people are going to the return counters and then getting a printed sheet saying, hey, you're not going to get your refund, and here's why. Go to this website and this URL and handle it with them because that's none of our business. Do you feel like this is fair, Doyen?
It's so complicated because while I understand there are people out there who probably do take advantage of return policies and probably try to find ways to cheat the system, sometimes you're just not happy with your item and you want to take it back. I do understand how that can get tricky for people, but then I do understand the side of the retailers as well, that this isn't a one-off thing or even 2-3 returns. It's like, okay, you are a habitual returner. What's going on?
I can definitely see this making sense for clothing companies. They already have high churn and when you see content creators doing huge hauls of $500 spends, $1,000 spends, and a lot of them are just doing these to show off to their audience. So here's what I bought from Amazon, and sending the rest back when it doesn't fit or it doesn't necessarily match their style. I know that they're probably getting a lot of pushback from the sellers on those platforms. And that is just a tension that they just don't want to deal with anymore.
We also have to consider what it costs a company financially to be able to accept a return. If they're paying for your shipping and handling, they're paying the restocking fee, then they're trying to relist it to get it sold again. Because it's a used item, they can probably only sell it for a fraction of what they were initially retailing it for. I can understand those costs adding up.
CNBC actually quoted an expert, Robert Overstreet, a professor at Iowa State, said that most of the returns cost up to 40% of the original retail price to get put back on the shelf. But I want to know, what is considered too often? A lot of the language that companies use in their return policies just says unreasonable or unusual patterns, right? And nothing concrete, no actual figure, like 10 returns in a month to create a hard line.
Imagine you're doing some online shopping and you really like a pair of pants and you're saying, okay, I'm going to get two sizes and whichever size fits me better, I'm going to keep that one and return the other. If that's the shopping pattern or habit that you've developed just in the age of online shopping, it also seems a little unfair to get flagged for that.
I know that the retail equation has been sued in the past for being considered unfair and people feeling like they were flagged and not having much recourse to correct their shopper score through the company. Those lawsuits have been dismissed, but there are many companies that still use this service. And so shoppers just have to really think about the purchase before you make it, and also consider what the policy is before you go in so you don't end up being flagged.
We may be moving into an era where our chocolate isn't actually made from cocoa.
That doesn't sound like something I want on my plate.
You might not have much of a choice depending on the cost of chocolate and peanut butter in the future. This California startup, Voyage Foods, has raised $94 million to make more of its chocolate-free chocolate and peanut-free peanut butter, bean-free coffee, and hazelnut-free Nutella-style spread.
Is this the future of food, where we have to create products that emulate the raw materials that we once knew and were once critical to the production of the foods that we love?
Yes. Because of numerous factors, including climate change, some of these products are just not as easily available. Let's take chocolate, for example. The company is looking to bridge the gap between chocolate supply and demand, as volatility in the commodities market is making chocolate more expensive than it's ever been.
Two of the biggest cocoa producers in the world are Ghana and Ivory Coast. Back in March, Reuters reported that the major African cocoa production facilities in those countries have stopped or cut processing because they can't afford to buy beans, meaning that chocolate prices around the world are likely to skyrocket. Consumers are already seeing the increase in price. Chocolate makers are raising up the cost after 3 years of poor cocoa harvests, with a fourth one expected.
Cocoa prices have more than doubled this year and hit a new record in April. And as a result of the rally that's happening in cocoa futures, coffee is also following a similar path. So while it might sound strange, why is there a startup working on eliminating the core ingredients from a lot of these staples? If we're moving into a place where these items are just not easily available, the harvests are bad for years at a time, consumers around the world, I'm sure, are still going to keep demanding chocolate bars or their coffee. This startup could be at the right place and at the right time. Agricultural giant Cargill, which is partnering with the startup, said that Voyage Foods is going to offer more stable pricing and reliance on raw materials that are less subject to market volatility, Bloomberg reported.
It's really hard for me to imagine a future where chocolate doesn't exist. But it's so real because if climate change continues to affect the environment and agricultural production, there's a chance that it'll be more scarce. It'll be more of a luxury than it already is.
The chocolate that we're already receiving, I'm not going to name any names. They increasingly have less and less cocoa every year, but it's still being marketed to us as chocolate.
Chocolate-like, chocolate-ish.
Chocolate whisper. So you mentioned plant-based meat alternatives. People haven't been super into those. Like, I don't know how you feel about that.
I've read that people are less inclined to adopt fake meat, which comes from a living being and anything that is supposed to replicate that, which is naturally generated, I should say. It's a little creepy. It feels very sci-fi experimental. I feel like people are more so inclined to adopt something that isn't replicating meat. It's not as scary and intimidating. And I'm sure there are some plant-based meat alternatives that taste-wise are missing the mark. Not giving chicken, no matter what you call it. I don't care if you put an apostrophe in it. Don't call it a steak.
Go ahead, get it off your chest.
Don't call it milk, okay? Big nut milk. I see you.
There is a milk brand that I love, and it's called Malk, literally spelled M-A-L-K.
They know what they're doing, though. They're positioning themselves as the next best thing and not an imposter.
But I do think about the cocoa farmers, and if we do eventually move back to a place where they're seeing more fruitful harvests, I wonder how this transition to alternatives is going to impact the livelihoods of thousands of people and could impact economies.
There would definitely be a shift in how producers in West Africa and other parts of the world where cocoa production and coffee bean production is big in how they conduct business. I would pray that that would be the alternative and the problem that we should consider versus being in a world that is so depleted of its natural resources that these alternatives are a necessity versus something as a nice to have. Let there be a boom again in coffee bean and cocoa production that the farmers are walking around in abundance trying to figure out what to do with all of their crop versus them not having anything to rely on at all. That's what I want for the future. We are the world. We are the children.
It's totally fine to have these alternatives, but we shouldn't only keep the consumers in mind that have insatiable appetites for these products, but also think about the farmers. This is their livelihood, and an alternative could really disrupt that.
How do you feel about fast food?
I think there's a time and a place.
So certain brands you're cool with, but certain you're not touching.
I think so. And just in general, in moderation.
Well, you might not be alone because more people who are looking to eat out, especially those on a budget, are losing interest in a lot of fast food companies in the U.S. Everything from McDonald's to the dine-in restaurants like Applebee's, Friday's, Chili's, Red Lobster, and the like. Inflation and a higher cost of living are really tugging on people's budgets. And at this point, they're thinking, either I'm going all in, I'm going to a nice high-end restaurant and really splurging, getting a unique experience, or I'm staying at home and I'm cooking myself. I'm busting out the pots and pans, and we got McDonald's at home.
Did you see the TikTok of the woman that buys nuggets from the supermarket, buys fries, and then she puts them in like fast food packaging to kind of trick her kids?
No, I did not see that at all.
Well, I feel like this woman would relate to what we're talking about here because according to February inflation data in the Consumer Price Index, food at home prices grew 1% yearly, while restaurant prices rose 4.5% over the last year. What does that mean? It was cheaper in February to buy your groceries and prepare them at home than eating out. And if you start to consider the value of the meals you're paying for from McDonald's all the way up to a high-end restaurant, maybe people are starting to feel like I'm not getting as much for my money that I would have 5 years ago or 4 years ago.
So according to a report by Bloomberg, McDonald's wants to lure back those lower income customers into their stores by offering a brand new $5 meal deal. We already know McDonald's for the dollar menu, and then they rolled out a $1, $2, $3 menu, getting a little, you know, creative. But now they want to get the franchise operators on board to give the $5 meal out, but they're getting some pushback. Those who are running the franchises are saying that operating costs like labor are getting even more expensive. So offering this budget option doesn't necessarily line up with the profits that they're trying to make.
I didn't ask, are you a fan of fast food?
I too believe that there's a time and a place, but I will say that when things are looking tight or I want something that is quick and I know exactly what I'm getting, yeah, I'm gonna stand in line. I'll be at the kiosk. I remember recently, I've been to McDonald's. I got a 4-piece nugget and a small fry, no drink, mind you, and it was almost $8. I was shocked, because when did McDonald's go up like this? Even though they have those budget options, you can go on there and they'll offer you 2 McDoubles for $3, but where are the fries? When you go to a fast food restaurant like that, you want the whole package deal, but the price of a combo is so much. And people who used to be able to feed their kids after school on the way to soccer practice or get something quick on the way to work, even a little breakfast meal, that's just getting way more expensive to the point where you can't even justify the cost anymore. Because who's paying $7 for a small fry and a 4 nuggets? Make that make sense.
So here's the thing, right? Because I totally hear you on the cost of what's really an appetizer. 4 nuggets and some fries, that's a quick snack. But for a parent that wants to provide dinner and decides to stop at McDonald's, they are thinking about how much they want to spend, which is why I mentioned that woman that said, listen, I have these McDonald's or these Chick-fil-A packages at home. I'm going to refill it. She's most likely doing that for cost reasons.
And people are not slick, because even though everybody's on there healthy and everybody wants to be right and tight for the summer, those lines in the drive-thru are still long. Around 6 p.m., a good 7 a.m. right before you go into the office, for those of you who still have to commute, it can be clutch. And that's the thing, like, we cannot count out the people who still frequent these stores. There's a market audience for these restaurants. And the fact that they're unable to keep up the foot traffic just because of the cost, it's showing that people are really changing their behaviors when it comes to food, and it's just that bad for consumers right now that they have to cut out what was once considered a value option out of their budget.
A $5 meal deal could be what would get them back into the stores. Speaking of deals, do you remember when Red Lobster did the endless shrimp promotion last year?
Yes, the endless shrimp that they made a permanent fixture because it was so popular as a limited edition item.
Well, that promotion cost the company $11 million in losses in the third quarter. And in the fourth quarter, it cost them $12.5 million in operating losses.
Endless shrimp did that?
Because you know what? My assumption is people came and said, I don't want to drink. Mm-mm. I don't want to order nothing else. Give me my endless shrimp. Let me be on my way. But I remember seeing TikToks of people like having fun and being like, we're going to Red Lobster. How many pieces of shrimp do you think we're each going to eat? Like, people were loving the promotion, but it ended up costing the company quite a bit.
So they had to know, in combination with the biscuits, you can come in and get probably a low cost drink and get endless seafood. Yeah, people were going to be coming through. I'm surprised they weren't better prepared for this, though.
The mistake the company made and admitted was that they priced the promotion too low. It started at $20 and then up to $22. And late last year, it was around $25. But that was on top of the company already facing some other financial woes that this endless shrimp promotion only made worse.
I see. I read that they had issues with leadership turnover and consumer interest as a whole, kind of falling behind as a brand of the past, not really transitioning into a more modern option for people. It seems like they just need a complete overhaul because, like, they got a shout out from Beyonce not too long ago, and that's a huge thing. People still want to support these companies. Like, a lot of the times you hear conversation about, oh, are you too good for Olive Garden? Are you too good for Chili's, Cheesecake Factory? Fast casual restaurants still have a place in our dining habits. It's just a matter of positioning. We have so many options available out to us now. And I think that a lot of these companies that have been around for a very long time need to find a way to elevate and bring their brands into a new era where they understand that people are conscious of cost, but also want a fun experience that they can rely on. Like, I know that I'm going to lunch and my lunch is going to cost this much and it's going to be good every single time.
I agree with you, right? And the brand positioning could be, this is great value for your money. From McDonald's to Red Lobster, these are the conversations that the executives are having. And now it's time for a little something sweet. A chaser, one might say. Joyce, how have you been? How's life?
It's good. My something sweet right now is a well-known, beloved series on Bravo, and I'm not talking about The Housewives. I'm talking about Summer House, Martha's Vineyard. I'm turning into a little bit more of a reality TV girl now. It's different for me, but I'm having a lot of fun.
So tell me a bit more about this show because I literally never heard of it before.
Are you serious? Girl, okay. So Summer House, Martha's Vineyard, it's a group of friends who go out into Martha's Vineyard for vacation. They spend about 2 weeks there together, and this cast is actually all Black. Most of them are based in New York City, and they know each other through work, school, the arts, different levels of engagement. So you have a lot of personalities coming together in one space, and you see what happens when they clash, when they get along. There's a lot of fights, a lot of drama, and it's good TV. I usually like competition-based reality shows like Survivor, RuPaul's Drag Race, MasterChef, and the like. But right now, I'm just having a blast watching the interpersonal drama, the relationships growing, crumbling. All of that dynamic is so entertaining to me.
So you like the mess. Okay, got it. Great.
I do like the mess. It makes me feel good about myself, and it also makes me want to explore the vineyard. On the show, they do talk about the history of Martha's Vineyard and how it was a place where people, especially Black people in America, were able to establish a community of affluence, a community of access to spaces that they historically were denied from. And I think that it's so interesting. I've even seen a bunch of travel groups who curate trips throughout the year to go to Martha's Vineyard, especially during the spring and the summer when the weather is nice and you can go out boating, you can enjoy the seafood. There's so much to explore there. So Doyen, what's your something sweet?
My something sweet is that I have been a student of my native tongue. I have been taking Yoruba classes, which I have been enjoying so, so much. You know, being first generation, I grew up hearing Yoruba all the time, but never really spoke it back. I would always respond in English. So I can understand the language fluently, but I cannot speak it fluently. And I think there's a word for that. Receptive multilingualism, when you can understand a language but can't speak it.
Oh my God, that's me in French.
I am now taking Yoruba classes to close that gap, to give me a little bit more confidence about speaking my mother tongue. I think a lot of language is just confidence. So learning the proper grammar has just been so rewarding for me. And Yoruba is a tonal language, so it's also been really beautiful to just learn like the tones and how to pronounce words correctly. And I just love it. I love it for me. I love this phase that I'm in right now.
It's so beautiful to me when we're able to translate that into the way that we speak, the clothes that we wear, the food that we even eat. You're carrying on the culture, girl. That's amazing.
Right. And I think about it a lot that I can speak Spanish better than I can speak Yoruba. And that's a shame. Like, that's not okay.
As someone who already speaks her native tongue pretty fluently, you're going to have so much fun when you really get into the conversational side of things. I speak Haitian Creole, and I love being in public talking to my friends and talking about maybe someone walking by.
Oh, not for the mess. Not for the mess.
The mess is the throw line here in this something sweet, okay? You need a little bit of drama. Didn't Kendrick Lamar just come out with the biggest diss track of the decade? We are fully engaging in the mess in 2024. The standard has been set.
No. Keep that over there.
It's just fun to have other people that you can speak to, and you can switch back and forth between the English and your language. It just creates another dimension of conversation altogether. You're going to enjoy it. How are you taking these classes?
So it's virtual, and my teacher is actually based in Nigeria. So I'm a part of a small group of students that every Saturday morning we log on and we take our classes.
And when do you think that you're going to really catch on so you can put it to the test?
You know, I really should just start practicing now with like my mom and my aunts.
Okay, well, maybe you can teach me a few things. You can do a little bit of a language swap.
I would love that.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Confidant. If you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe to the show and tell a friend, because sharing is caring.
Please rate and review us 5 stars. If you want to get in touch, you can reach us by email at theconfidantpod@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @theconfidantpod. Bye.
See you next time.